This is a CBC Radio 1 podcast.
What do you do if you yearn to be on a spiritual path, but you just haven't found the right fit? If you're Mary Joseph, you create your own, and you ask a few other seekers to join you. Marion Woodman, Stephen Lewis, Romeo Dallaire. Mary Joseph is a lawyer and United Church minister and a self-proclaimed seeker. She created something called the Seeker's Dialogue, and now she's written a book about the experience. Mary joins me today along with the renowned Jungian analyst Marion Woodman. Mary Joseph, welcome. Marion Woodman,
Thank you. Welcome back to Tapestry.
Thank you. I would like to ask you both about your own spiritual journeys to begin. Mary Joseph, you are a United Church minister. You were at one time a Roman Catholic.
Oh, with a name like Mary Joseph, you know that there's some Catholicism in my background.
As a Mary Margaret Ann Gabriel Hines, I hear you.
Okay.
Tell me a little bit about your faith journey.
I grew up in a very rather orthodox Catholic family. My father emigrated from Lebanon. His family emigrated, and that's they come from a Maronite tradition, which is more orthodox. And we grew up in the typical 50s and 60s. We grew up with certain notions about who God is and who we are in relation to God, and a lot of it didn't make sense. You know, my father would, during Passover, which we call Sabbat, he would put the mark on the door. And, you know, weird things like that I never got. And as I continued to question over the years, some of the teachings just didn't make sense. Mostly the insistence that there must be an intermediary between myself and God.
As opposed to what some people call the direct path.
That's right. That's right. And I had to wait, unfortunately, for my father to pass away, or I would have broken his heart. Mm-hmm. And once he did, I did a Master's of Divinity, still practice law, but did my searching, and then decided to be ordained. I knew that was my path. I always did know it was my path, even as a young child. But I also knew that it wasn't available to me in the Catholic Church.
But I'm intrigued by the fact that you had to go beyond the church in which you are a minister.
Mm-hmm.
You were still left seeking, even though you're a minister. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And one of the catalysts for my my serious seeking came while I was studying my Master's of Divinity. I discovered the Gospel of Thomas. And it was a Gnostic gospel, a word that I had never had the occasion to learn growing up. And when I read it, Mary, I wept. There was a wisdom in there that spoke to my soul. And then I got angry and I said, why didn't anybody tell me these kinds of wisdom writings and sayings existed? And that was the beginning of it. Then I was hungry and couldn't stop looking at all of the texts that were forbidden.
Marion Woodman, has your life felt like a direct path, or have you been more of the traditional churchgoer? How have you come into contact with the divine?
I was born into a parsonage. My father was a United Church minister. And I grew up believing that angels existed and that I could talk to them. And they indeed could talk to me. And whether that was in my imagination or not, it was a powerful, powerful influence, especially after I found out that Joan of Arc talked to angels. I didn't care whether other people did or not. I'm amazed at my own confidence.
Hmm.
I didn't doubt in spite of what other people told me. And that faith continued, I would say, of childlike faith, perhaps, until I went to India. And what I saw in India blew everything in my emotional and spiritual life, particularly when I came home. And I had experiences in India that were so heartbreaking and, little children taking me on as their mother, as it were,
mm-hmm.
and holding on to my dress day after day. And I had to mend my skirts every night because they just hold so tight. And that life in the streets of India with people starving and dying, and, you know, they had 6 feet of cement and that was their home. So when I got back to quiet London.
London, Ontario, yeah.
To a very conservative, where I had lived for basically most of my life, I could not accept that self-centered, you know, the food isn't good enough when you go to a party attitude. And I just broke under the pressure, the splitting of the haves and the have-nots in the world. And I was desperate. So I went to, it just happened, my husband and I went to England, and I went to a wonderful old man who was an analyst and a minister. And that was the beginning.
Mm.
And I would also say there, Mary, I mean, this was 35 years ago, but the people that I was with, even the little ones clutching my skirt, were not in despair. There was a integrity in the family with their 6 feet of cement sidewalk. There was a joy in the streets. And at home, there's always so much complaining and things aren't good enough. And, you know, that sense of presence, there's no time for it.
Mm-hmm. Well, when Mother Teresa first went to New York City, she said she found poverty far greater there than she found in Calcutta. And the poverty
of
that
soul.
She saw was the poverty of soul.
Yeah.
Is that why you launched something called the Seeker's Dialogue and 4,000 people
Absolutely.
Come out to hear?
Absolutely. I'm also a spiritual director, Mary, and I work with professionals. And that happened only because a number of people watched me go through that process of practicing law, seeking, going into ministry, still practicing law. And they would always, whenever I was at a cocktail party or whatever, they'd always just pull me aside and say, I'd like to talk to you about something. And they need to tell their stories.
And it wasn't a legal question,
no,
I'm guessing.
No, it wasn't a legal question. It was, you know, I have these yearnings, I have these things inside. And it just became so apparent to me that I wasn't alone. This was particularly professionals. It just are hungry.
But 4,000 people, you know, what are they hungering for? What's the void that people are trying to fill when you put up a sign that says Seeker's Dialogue? Mm-hmm. Come listen, come speak, come search with some like-minded souls. Mm. What's the void? What are people looking for?
I think it's complex. There's no easy answer, and it's different for everyone. The what was exciting about Seeker's Dialogue is it was presented in two different ways. One, with an assurance that there would be no dogma, no tenet enforced upon anyone. And the second, the offer was, and it's not about one person offering wisdom. Wisdom is found in everyone, and we have identified leaders in our society that have found wisdom through their fields of work or experiences that can address the topic that we're discussing on a particular night. Marian was the second person that came in the sequence of events, and it was about, once we start our journey, once we start our quest, which we launched with Thomas Moore, the next question is, then what is it in our society or in our behavior that locks our soul up or deadens it?
Mm.
And how can we revitalize it or bring it back to life so that we can continue on this spiritual journey and thrive?
Who else better than Marian Woodman? And now, what was, I don't want to ask you to deliver the entire lecture to me, but I'm so intrigued by this expression that the soul somehow is deadened, that it somehow is not vibrant and it can be put to sleep.
Well, if you believe that the soul is eternal and that it's before us coming into this little body and after us when we leave this little body, then it becomes a sense of being directed by something larger than you are, knowing that your life has some kind of a spiritual path and you aren't on it, and therefore things are not quite right. The ego has had its way. The ego is usually coming from a sense of power. That's our judgment. Our society is based on power and judgment. And there's a point where that is no longer satisfactory, where the ego fails. It cannot have its way anymore.
The center cannot hold.
That's right. And it's not the center. That's the other thing. The ego is not the center. And people realize that the center is empty and dying. And then they begin to look for soul.
How does the soul let you know when it is at this danger point? How does the soul get your attention? How do you know when your soul is in slumber, when it's dying?
Life isn't worth living. At least that's what it happened to me and to most of the people who come into my practice, I would say. A lot of my people, of course, are addicts because I was an addict once. And therefore, there's huge living or dying. And until they can get the sense of soul and speak with soul every night if they watch their dreams. Because as a Jungian analyst, I work basically with dreams because they are coming from our body, our own body, and they give us the pictures that if we can understand those symbols, we can understand what's going on in our personal selves in relation to the divine.
Mary Joseph, I was initially surprised to see some of the names. You had Stephen Lewis, who had just come back from various parts of Africa on his crusade against AIDS. You had Romeo Dallaire, who said, "I know there is a God because I negotiated with his enemy in Rwanda." People who were speaking from spiritual depths, but people who are not associated with traditional religion in the headlines. Why this particular lineup? This particular lineup of speakers. Why did you move beyond the realm of what we might consider traditional religious speakers?
It was important for me to make it clear that the wisdom is not coming from preconceived religious tenet in any field. The wisdom is coming from the spiritual nature of an individual, whether they are religious or not. Now,
the thinking being, we are all spiritual individuals.
All spiritual individuals.
I've always loved this saying, you know, whether you know it or not, you are on a spiritual path.
Oh, well,
you might not know it, but guess what? You're on one.
I would go along completely with what Mary's saying. The people come in to a Jungian analysis because they are trying to connect to that soul value within themselves. And once they know the power of dreams to point the direction, to show where the mistakes are being made, why you are being cut off at certain places, once they understand the power of the metaphor, which of course is all biblical language, I mean, great art, all the great art of in the Bible and so on is all based on metaphor. Mm. Because there are two meanings. There's the physical and the spiritual in every metaphor. Once you understand that, you may start painting your images. You may dance them. You may write poetry. So your whole creative world, soul, is released. And then you begin to realize who you are. And your focus is on living your soul journey.
Well, what, I mean, it brings to mind, it's the famous quote by Carl Jung, of all the patients I have seen in the second half of life, didn't he say there was not one whose problem was at root a problem of spiritual in nature?
Yeah. Well, in fact, Carl Jung, Marion will know this, and Carl Jung had written over his doorframe, which is now on his tombstone, the words, "Bidden or not bidden, God is present." And he understood that, and, you know, God, however you define God, he understood that that essence is there, always.
Whether or not you believe you are treading this spiritual path,
or not.
Got news for you, you're on it anyway, right? Mm-hmm. I'm interested in hearing a little bit more about some of these 4,000 people who came to the Seeker's Dialogue. Did they seem to be churchgoers to you? Were they looking for something to supplant church in addition to church? Mm-hmm. Has church lost them?
I've got an enormous amount of feedback from people. The emails, well, it just buried me for a year, literally. Every event was different. And so the first one, we started with Thomas Moore. Tom and I walked up the center of the aisle. Now, this was held at Metropolitan United Church. It holds 1,000 people. So the place is packed. Tom and I walk up the center aisle, and we start Seeker's Dialogue. The number of emails I received afterwards were things like, "I knew you were trying to fit some church in there and you're trying to get us to go to church," because they saw it as a procession. There are so many buttons in people about church.
Wow.
The people that came really wanted us to walk the talk, that we are not giving you church as you have had bad experiences in church.
But you're a minister. You know, what's so wrong with church?
There is nothing wrong with church if it allows people to come into a God experience.
There's something, the feeling is there.
There's something awfully wrong with church if it takes either a God experience away or denies God experiences for individuals for that time and for years afterward. And many people have had those kinds of experiences at church where they were just shut down, that I can't find God.
They did
in this
things
place.
By rote, and it didn't mean anything to them at that deeper level.
Is that a soul-deadening thing to you, doing things by rote?
Yes.
Well,
I'm not interested either in cookies after the morning service or waiting for the bazaar, and that's, you know, all that kind of thing. For me, it's not a place of just social events.
But community, fellowship, isn't that part of the picture?
Yeah, but the community comes through the faith. And if the community comes before the faith, it's going to, in my opinion, it won't last. Because when the crisis comes, there's nobody been through the anguish at the level you're experiencing it, that can just come and sit with you, and you know that they're there, and that there's another presence that is uniting you. The word presence is terribly important to me, because it means a knowing that someone, God, or the God within a friend, is able to see you as you are, love you as you are. Most of us have been brought up to please our parents, say what we're supposed to say, be the good little girls that we were meant to be, and little boys. And there's a point where that breaks down completely.
So you want to feel the presence. You want your soul rocked before they bring on the coffee and cookies afterwards.
Absolutely. Because I know that the bonding, the crucifixion comes before the resurrection. I really believe that. And you can't have the one without the other.
I'm Mary Hines. You're listening to Tapestry on CBC Radio 1. And on Sirius Satellite 137, my guests are the Jungian analyst Marion Woodman and Mary Joseph, a lawyer and United Church minister. Mary Joseph is the founder of Seekers Dialogue. Nearly 4,000 people came out to the events in Toronto, all of them hungry to discuss one question. Why am I here? Not why am I here at the event. Why am I here on the planet? Marion Woodman was one of the speakers. She is the author or co-author of 11 books, including Addiction to Perfection, The Pregnant Virgin, and Bone, Dying into Life. Mary Joseph, I'm interested in your perspective as a minister, as well as the woman behind this Seeker's Dialogue. Do you think anything is non-negotiable in the spiritual life? Must you have prayer? Must you have belief? Must you gather with other people? Is anything a must-have in the spiritual life?
If there is anything that is a must, I would say only that it's integrity. Community is important, but not a prerequisite. But community allows us to experience a journey through the dialogue and through the experience of being with others. And, you know, Marion said something, and I just want to go back for a minute, Mary, because Marion said something that was very, very important when we were talking about church. Mm-hmm. And she said, rote can deaden the soul. I want to emphasize that there is a big difference between rote and ritual.
Yeah.
And ritual, and Marion would agree, because so often she talks about how ritual can enliven the soul and give answers to the soul.
I think ritual is essential to soul.
Very much, very much. So we want to make that distinction.
So by rote, we're talking about something that is mindlessly repeated?
Yeah. Yes.
That doesn't allow the God experience.
So when you say the God experience, what is that?
It comes from a place, I don't think, where there is language, Mary. It is a knowledge that is beyond our cognitive ability to put into words or thoughts or pictures.
Can you... And I understand that, and I appreciate you bearing with me as I press you to put it into words.
I can give you an example.
Please do.
Have you ever experienced a time where you have witnessed something or been a part of something that suddenly you just wept?
Yes.
And there wasn't a real connection to what you were viewing or experiencing. That you know that there was something going on inside you that was so profound it brought tears, and that was neither anger nor joy, it was tears. And,
yes.
And my spiritual director, Jinx, calls those God tears. That is an example of a God experience. We transcend what we know in our brains and in our hearts to a place that is all-encompassing and yet nowhere.
Marion Woodman, what has it felt like for you, the God experience? How have you felt it in your life?
I would agree with Mary. It's surprised by joy or surprised even by grief. Certainly it happens for me in the creative process where something comes through that I never thought. I was not doing the drawing. I was not doing the dancing. I was being danced or I was being written. And I read it afterwards and I think, my goodness, that's great. Splendid. And then I think, I didn't do that.
So what, you feel like the vessel for something
I am the
larger?
Vessel, the instrument. Yeah. And I think of myself as the instrument that has to be tuned exactly in terms of physical and spiritual, mental life, and that there's a shimmer comes with the God experience, that you feel your whole body, every cell lit up, just maybe for a moment, but you always remember that. And at that moment, you are who you were meant to be. And you feel, and that for me is soul. Mm-hmm. lit up by spirit.
Lit up by spirit. Mary Joseph, how do you, what's soul to you?
It's hard for me to think of soul. I prefer to think of spirit, and we talk about the difference between spirit and soul, and no one really knows the difference. We can't prove any of this. But I think more of spirit as part of a living thing that is dynamic, where the soul is more of a repository. And I have a hard time imagining anything static.
Anything static.
And so this whole notion of soul doesn't quite resonate with me. To me, everything is spirit. If it's corporal or ego, it's flesh. And if it's not, it's spirit.
See, there's where I have a problem.
Because you want the body to be really involved, right?
God has come to me through breaking my body down periodically. You know, if I become just a little bit too happy and too proud, too ego proud, and too driven in an ego direction. For example, I love teaching school, and I taught school for 25 years, and all of a sudden I was too ill to go into the classroom, and I could not figure out why. So I have had to incorporate body as I have to say, I have come to my deep understanding of God through the body experience. But there's where I see soul in the cells of my body, in my bones. So that and I see soul as the feminine that lives in nature, you know, namely the body and the earth. And I see spirit as a fiery air quality that is so riveting, I can hardly endure it when it comes. Mind you, I'm delighted when it's there, but I couldn't live with it. You know, Eliot says we cannot bear too much reality. And it's as if it comes, drops its golden sperm, and flies away again.
But here's where it falls apart for me. If you have, and clearly you do have, gifts as a teacher, what kind of God breaks your body so that you can no longer be in the classroom sharing your gifts with students? I know this is a fairly childish view of God, but explain it to me.
Well, I certainly wondered myself, I have to say, when it happened. But I could never have imagined the life that I have now. In my wildest dreams, I was perfectly happy teaching in that classroom with those students. Now, mind you, they were in their teens, and I had to restrict my language and even my experience to that teen world. And suddenly, it was broken open. And I had 5 years in Zurich working to become an analyst, and that broke through all those restraints. And when I came home, I was terrified when I got invitations to speak in California. You know, and I think when I got there, I think, you know, all I have to do is open the car door and fall out in the street, and then I won't make a fool of myself in front of a great auditorium of people. And my fear of getting up and actually speaking in those large crowds, I would just pray, you know, and I'd say, Sophia, let me be true to myself and to you. And whether they all walk out or whether they don't, at least I haven't betrayed myself and you. And I accept now that this was my destiny line.
Mary Joseph, I keep going back to this idea of seeking as opposed to the more structured traditional religious forms many of us have grown up with. How unplugged can you be and still be seeking the divine? Can you be gardening? Can you do it through music? Because the criticism is always, look, these are a bunch of self-indulgent people who say, oh, I don't need to church. I don't need to go to church. I find God on the golf course, you know, and then just go their merry self-indulgent ways. How unplugged can you be and still be in touch with the divine, seeking the divine?
For myself, I look at it, the difference between giving and receiving, and it's a relationship with the divine. It's not, I'm the one, it's all about me, and the divine has given me this beautiful forest, and here I am, I'm having God experience because God's given me this beautiful forest. Even though there's a lot of theology that says God always looks for us, I think that's a two-way street. And that looking for God needs to be intentional. You asked earlier about, is there a prerequisite to a spiritual search? And I would say if there's anything, it's integrity.
Yes.
And we need to do our work. Just like Mary was talking about, sometimes her God has broken down her body. Sometimes we need to do our work, that it's not given to us on a silver platter, although it is given to us. All is given to us on a silver platter. But the new community that is, which is now Next Generation Secrets Dialogue and Pathways that I formed up in Markham, there's a group of individuals that have come together. It's a Christian church because I'm a Christian minister. But these groups of individuals that have come together are all over the map. It's the goddess and it's Jesus and it's let's talk about everything. They all have some Christian background. And it's these kinds of things that we talk about, is where are those God experiences? And they all recognize that God experiences can happen anywhere. However, we need to do our work. And so they come into community. They come every Sunday morning or a Wednesday night. They come together to do the work, to discover more about who they are and who the Spirit is.
Mary Joseph, you mentioned being swamped by mail after the first few outings. Oh. Will you do it again?
Because it almost killed me.
Slumped over in her chair considering the possibility.
The Secrets Dialogue element I would love to do again. It was certainly just, it was not for profit. I actually started it on my line of credit and prayed that it would break even, which it barely did. But the truth is that I have been blessed now. The United Church of Canada have actually hired me as a mission strategist. And they've given me this opportunity to create it in Markham. So I really have the best of both worlds now. I have a sponsor, a big sponsor, and we're continuing the work that Seekers started.
And Marion Woodman, what's next on your path?
Well, where I'm working now, you know, I really think that we are one world. Technology has made us one world. But spiritually, we are in no way able to catch up with that. And the upshot is that we are killing each other through our own shadow projections on each other.
And which is to say, they are bad, they are evil.
They are bad, but
they are
the
enemy.
With my evil. And we're doing that to each other. Instead of taking responsibility for our small little eyes and trying to open them, we project our meanness onto someone else. So, you know, I look at these different religions and what we've been talking about here in terms of the Buddhists and the Muslims and the many different kind of Christian religion, and if you look at it carefully, they're basically saying the same thing, each one opening up another petal of the flower. And so I see all of us in this work attempting to take in that one world vision and recognize there is one God, there is a mountain. We're all climbing that mountain by different paths, but there's one top. And if we can just hold that and not kill each other on the way up. And, you know, my world is through the individual soul. But I've also discovered that the individual souls meet each other and want to form these wonderful groups. And it's a natural part of loving to want to be in community. So that's where I'm trying to hold the vision.
Mm. What a delight to hear from you both. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary.
Thank you, Mary.
Marion Woodman is a Jungian analyst. Mary Joseph is a United Church minister and the editor of Seeking the Sacred, Leading a Spiritual Life in a Secular World. It's published by ECW Press.